This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we're back looking at WrestleMania 20. We got Mark Claire in the house with us, me and Scott. PlaceToBeNation.com, where you can see all of us writing articles and doing podcasts and having lots of fun. Just having a lot of fun out here. Markle, Requiem for Parenthood went up today. That was me, Ben Morris, Jen Engel. Looked back at six seasons of Braverman greatness. We do an email style back and forth, sharing our memories, where we think the characters would go from here if they still existed and whatnot. Pay tribute to one of our favorite shows that, of course, had its run ended over the past couple weeks. Greatest Song of the 90s tournament. Unbelievably enough, we're into the final four. So if you want to get your vote in, the final four is going to close over the next day, and the final matchup will be up and running. So be sure to get your votes in now for the final four. Aaron George had Wrestling's Four Corners, looking at Raw, NXT, SmackDown, Ring of Honor, Impact. Breaks down what worked, what didn't, and what upset him. Also said, you know what? He's going to talk about Impact Wrestling in a little bit more detail. So he's saying a good alternative, Impact 213-15. So look at his recap of that. Charles Williams had This Week in 90s Wrestling, February 15th to the 21st. A must-read article for all wrestling historian fans. That is something you do not want to miss. Jason Greenhouse delivered your 1990s playlist of love for Valentine's Day weekend. And Chad Campbell debuted his great new Super No Vacancy podcast, where he looked at, went solo, Mike Francesa style, looking at the 214-50 New Beginning New Japan show. So be sure to check that out, and that'll be an ongoing series from him looking at Japanese wrestling current and past. And the PWO-TBN Roundtable continued on, part 4 of 5 for the top 100 matches to watch before you die per WWE.com. New episodes of the Still Real to Us show, as well as the Bauer show, and of course all our other great podcasts always up and running. Titans of Wrestling as well looked at Black History Month. Seinfeld rewatch series continued on. Much, much more, Mark Claire. When's your next part going up for your top 25 matches of 14?
Well, I had to take a slight break from watching them since I needed 4.5 hours to rewatch this show. So I'll probably have it up possibly later this week. At a minimum, probably early next week will be part 3 of the breaking down the top matches of 2014. I have reviewed the top 10, or the first 10 of the top 25, counting down from the Voices of Wrestling list, which a lot of great Place to Be Nation contributors contributed to. So I'm rewatching all those matches, or watching them for the first time, mostly because I really wanted to just expand my horizons a bit. And I'm having a good time breaking those down, and people seem to be enjoying it. So look out for part 3 coming soon-ish.
Very cool. So info@placetobenation.com if you have questions for us. Facebook.com/placetobenation. Also, be sure to check out facebook.com/KevinKellyShowPTBN. That is the exclusive page for Kevin Kelly content. And pretty soon, he's going to have his own podcast feed as well. So you'll still get his shows on the PTB feed, but if you want just Kevin's in its own, you can follow that one as well. Should be posted soon. Kevin's going to be on Jim Ross's podcast this week, so be sure to check that out too to hear what he has to say with good old JR. Mm-hmm. And not me, who he's always with, the other JR.
Pretty funny. So there you go, placemanation.com. Let's go back to the garden, gentlemen. For a match that we thought was supposed to be pretty straightforward, indeed was not. JR, why don't we do the build, and then we'll get into both guys individually.
Sure. This is Brock Lesnar's final. The feud had been between the two had been simmering for a while.
You pulled a me there.
Whatever, please. I got ways to go to become you. Lesnar had caused right. Goldberg to be eliminated from the Royal Rumble, and Goldberg returned the favor by assisting Eddie Guerrero, defeating Lesnar for the championship at No Way Out. The 223 Raw, Mr. McMahon announced that Brock and Goldberg would be wrestling in an interpromotional match at WrestleMania. Sheriff Austin, not to be confused with Sheriff Cali, came down and requested to be the special referee. Vince hesitated and then agreed, only if Austin refereed his match with Eric Bischoff that was happening that night. Austin agreed and refereed the brief brawl that ended in a no contest. As Vince and Eric ran backstage, Austin was left alone in the ring. Lesnar hopped into the ring and dropped Austin with an F5. It was the first major bump Austin had taken since his final match at WrestleMania 19. That week on SmackDown, Lesnar revealed that he begged Vince for the match because he blamed Goldberg for his loss to Guerrero. Also, he blamed Austin for giving Goldberg the ticket. On 3-1, we saw a clip of Austin's ATV being lifted onto a truck and driven off. That week on SmackDown, Lesnar drove to the ring on it and mocked Austin by drinking beer after beer. after he had defeated Hardcore Holly. On 3-8, Austin vowed to show up on SmackDown to get his ATV back, but still vowed to call the Mania match down the middle. And it was during this week that Lesnar gave his notice that he'd be leaving the company after Mania. It had been clear to this point that the feud had been skewed towards Austin and Lesnar, with Goldberg not even appearing on TV in the final few weeks before the show. On the 3-11 SmackDown, Heyman told the SmackDown locker room to stick together and take care of Austin if he showed up. At the end of the show, Heyman led the majority of the locker room down the aisle. Lesnar rode to the ring on the ATV and Heyman called out Austin. When Austin emerged, the roster parted the sea and let Austin walk to the ring as an enraged Heyman freaked out. The two fought around ringside teasing finishers, but in the end, Lesnar bailed and Austin celebrated. Were you guys hyped for this match before you knew everything that was going down?
I think I was hyped for it back in November when they first started teasing it at Royal Rumble, and they had like Lesnar and Goldberg confront each other in the hall. And at that point, I was almost thinking that it's a championship versus champion match. I mean, that seemed like how they're going to build it up. Like, these two dominant forces that no one could take down would finally collide at WrestleMania 20. That's kind of what I envisioned. And at that time, it seemed super exciting. But then, I don't know. I think we had heard what was going on, I think, before the show. I mean, obviously, the whole crowd knew what was going on, that Brock was leaving. And it did seem odd to me on TV that it did shift to really a Lesnar-Austin feud. So it seemed like something was up. It almost seemed to me, I don't even know if we officially knew Austin wasn't going to wrestle again. It almost seemed to me like they were going to pull a fast one and change the match. I mean, it seemed like they were focusing so much on Brock versus Austin that's what we were going to get, which would have been, you know, awesome. But
Goldberg completely became an afterthought as this thing got closer and closer.
Yeah, I mean, they barely even talked about him. It was just like, Austin's going to referee that match. I mean, I don't think they even said who the match is against. He was like such an afterthought. And what should have been really one of the biggest matches of the decade, in history. I mean, these two most pushed, you know, the guys that have risen to the top faster than anyone else, but that come across as completely dominant, these two beasts finally meeting, and boy, it turned into something so different.
Right, because Brock, of course, like we said, after the 3-8 show, gave his notice, wanted to pursue a dream in the NFL. So in 4-30, he was done with all the travel and the lifestyle. He wanted to give pro football a chance while he was young enough to do so. Many officials weren't happy with Brock's decision, as he felt he was given a push he was undeserving of and that he didn't respect and appreciate what others had done for him to get him over so much. Regardless of those feelings, Lesnar was gone. He'd be cut by the Minnesota Vikings in the preseason. Claire, I remember we watched a lot of those games when he was trying out there in late 04. Lesnar turned down an offer to play in NFL Europe and got back into wrestling, contesting Doty's no-compete clause, claiming it was illegal to prevent him from making a living. The clause stated that Brock couldn't compete in wrestling or MMA until 2010. They temporarily settled in 2005 when WWE offered Brock a contract to come back and work. Brock considered it but turned it down. The lawsuit was reinitiated and the two sides settled out of court in 2006, giving Brock the freedom to work anywhere he wished. In 2006, he married Rena Mero, also known as Sable. After spending time competing in New Japan, Brock gave MMA a shot. He competed for K1 before inking a deal with the UFC in 2008. Brock quickly rose to the ranks, became one of the most prolific stars in MMA history when he captured the heavyweight title. In 2009, Lesnar contracted a possible life and career-threatening illness, and then was cleared to resume wrestling, competing in MMA, of course, had a couple more fights, lost a bad one, and then would, of course, make his return eventually. So at the time he left, he was the youngest WWE champion in history, final pay-per-view record of 13-7-1, and a final TV record 54-26-3. So he had 296 total matches for the company. What did you guys feel when you first heard the news? Do you remember? I think it was about a week before that we heard it, right? I know we knew that night going in that he was leaving.
Oh, definitely. Well, as the other 19,950 something. I was pretty pissed because I think we all knew that, as the official said, as you wrote said in that fact, that, I mean, he walked in here like the bee's knees and got everything very quick. I mean, he walked in the night after WrestleMania 18 and 5 months later is your world champion. At that time, that was unheard of for Vince to do something like that for anybody. And for the next couple of years, he was pretty much on top of the world. I mean, he was the face of SmackDown. And now all of a sudden, he probably had to give back a little bit. Didn't understand why. And decided, fuck this, I'm out of here. I don't think football had anything to do with it. I think he just did it so he didn't look like an asshole when he left. I think he knew he wasn't going to make the Vikings. I just think he did it because he didn't look like a dick when he left.
No, I think you're way off. I mean, you could be right, but I don't. A guy like Brock Lesnar to me doesn't go somewhere knowing he's not going to win or make it. I think in his mind, he thought for sure he'd make an NFL roster.
I kind of agree that I don't think he did it because of football purely. I think he did it because I listened to an hour long interview with him with Bill Simmons, and I really think he just legitimately did not like being on the road. I mean, really sounds like it was not the lifestyle for him. And I mean, I think that's as we can see with his new deal, that's why this is the only way he would ever come back, because it's just not for him. And you know, it sucks, and I can understand the people that are, you know, the wrestlers especially, the guys that work so hard, the guys that put him over constantly, you know, Taker, guys, veterans putting him over like he is just the best thing ever, being rubbed the wrong way when he just gives his notice and leaves. But, you know, I mean, to me, it's like he kind of did it the right way. He gave his notice. He finished his contract out. He finished the big match they've been promoting. And, you know, it's better that he does that if it really is something that he doesn't want to do than just be a miserable fuck who's just sitting around, you know, hating life, you know. It would show in his matches, and you know, what's the point? And I don't know, it was funny because they get to a "you sold out" chant during the match, but I don't think he really sold out. He didn't he didn't leave for a bigger contract somewhere. He left because he left money on the table. He could have been the highest paid wrestler of all time if he stuck this out, and he left that on the table. So if anything, he didn't sell out at all. He did the opposite. He just stayed true to himself, and you know, didn't stay doing something that he realized really wasn't for him, even with all that pressure, because I'm sure there's so much pressure. Look, Vince put you out of here, you know, Vince did all this for you, all these guys put you over. It must have been tough to do. I'm sure it wasn't an easy decision, but at the end of the day, what are you gonna do, just be miserable? I mean, if it wasn't for him, I think that he ultimately did the right thing by leaving. And he didn't do like other people that have done, like Austin did at one point and just walked out because he was mad one day. He didn't let the anger build up. He just made the decision calmly and, you know, gave his notice.
I think the timing is the problem. I think that was the problem at the time, because it seemed like he was on top of the world. He owned SmackDown. He was champion, had a great feud with Kurt. Loses to Eddie. Probably thought he shouldn't have. And then all of a sudden now...
I think you're projecting a lot here, Scott.
I don't think I am, because
do you guys think that he...
After 2 years, do you decide all this travel bugs me? I mean, you're
an
OVW
for... 2 years of traveling. He doesn't want to do it anymore. I don't think
anything
to do with...
But you know when you're going into the business, you know you're going to travel.
Maybe you don't know what it's like. I mean, I don't know. I think
until you've really done it, I mean, you don't... Even when I travel for like a week, it gets tiring, and you might think, "Oh, this is fun being on the road with the guys." But after 2 years, that's the amount of time we can really realize you hate it. I mean, maybe he started hating it after a couple months and stuck it out for all the reasons that we think.
A job you think you may like. I mean, look, very low level comparison. I moved to Connecticut. I'm like, oh, this is cool. We'll work in TV, blah blah. And then 3 years later, I fucking hated living there, so I left. I mean, it's not... I don't think it has anything to do with... Oh, I lost to Eddie. To me, Brock Lesnar does not seem like the type of human being that has ever, and that's in this run, his initial run, anything, has ever given a shit about whether he wins or loses.
Lost to the fucking Big Show. I mean, come on.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I really think that, and I thought he did the right thing with the timing, because maybe he could have waited till after Mania, but maybe he was going to win. You know, maybe they were going to put him over Goldberg. He could have been a real dick and taken the win and then walked, but he was nice enough to say the week before that, hey, I'm leaving, you know, do what you want with this match. And he lost here. He could have been an ass and be like, no, I'm winning, or I'm not showing up. I mean, I don't think he seems like the kind of guy to care, especially someone as respected as Eddie Guerrero. Now, if you had to put, you know, some degenerate, if you had some loser like Booker T or RVD over him,
if he had to lose to Hardcore Holly at the Rumble,
right, something like that, then maybe he's pissed. But to lose to a guy like Eddie Guerrero, who by all reports they were like really good friends and everything else, I can't imagine he was that upset, and that's what drove him to leave.
Do you guys think this was ever meant to be a championship match? Because that's what it always seemed like it was gonna be to me. It almost seemed like the Eddie Guerrero thing was a last minute decision. I don't think it really was, but I mean, as a fan watching at the time, it felt like it was always supposed to be like these two beasts. I guess it wasn't, because Hunter was probably always going to get his title back. So
yeah, I would say maybe at the time you thought that, but looking back, I think, and if you listen to like guys like Scott Keith and everything, it sounded like the plan, and Kevin, the plan for Benoit and Eddie was written in stone a long time ago, that they'd both be the guys. I mean, Kevin's hinted that it was as far back as like late 2002 that Guerrero was going to be the guy. And Keith has said he got word, I think it was like mid 2003, that Benoit was going to get the you know, WrestleMania slot here. So I don't think, and maybe they thought about it, but I doubt it was ever meant to be more than just a showdown of two bulls. So Goldberg's final appearance is here as well, known for a few weeks before the show that his contract was up after Mania. Of course, he debuted a year before. He decided to leave the company. He focused mainly on his acting career, dabbled briefly in MMA, was rumored to be discussing contracts at TNA. Nothing came of that. back and forth a couple times. Of course, now he's in decent terms with WWE. He shows up in some of their video packages and whatnot. So, final pay-per-view record, 5-3. So, a lot of matches in this year. eight matches. Only pinned on pay-per-view twice, both at the hands of...
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Triple H, of course.
The guy that deserves it.
So, as we mentioned, Austin's a referee.
The guy that never quit on the company.
That's right. Austin's a referee. Lots of excitement and hype for a long time heading in here. Rumors leaked the week before. Brock and Goldberg leaving. Austin would leave too, by the way. We haven't talked about that yet. I think he's on... We'll probably talk about next show, right? Is he on Raw for a few weeks after? I don't think it's immediate, right?
No, he's on for a little bit after.
Not much, though.
No, not much. Maybe a month.
I don't think he makes the next pay-per-view. I think it's a couple weeks. All the hype and excitement immediately killed out of the gate as soon as everyone knew what was going on. Huge pop for Austin. Brock gets booed and dumped on right away. Goldberg gets a little bit better of a reception. And for some reason... It seemed like the crowd was more behind him than Brock. Like, I don't know if they just ever thought Goldberg was a WWE guy and Brock, or WWE guy, and Brock was, and that's why everyone seemed more mad at Brock. Even though I thought Brock's reasoning made more sense, he just wanted out of the business, whereas Goldberg just kind of seemed like, "Nah, I'm done. I had my year. I'm out." Or at the least, they should have been seen on more even playing field. Terrible open to start the match with tons of stalling and a BS test of strength. Instead of owning the reaction and tearing the house down, they seemed to just mail it in, and they got rattled and kind of delivered a shitty start. I don't know if they were just trying to wait it out, thinking the crowd would, like... What did you guys think was going through your mind? Did you think, A, they just didn't give a fuck and were like, whatever? B, they should have owned it and went out with a classic? Or C, do you think they were waiting, thinking the crowd would die off after a couple of minutes, and then they'd get into the match? That's what it seemed like to me.
I think that they were just trying to recreate Hogan Warrior with the 10 different, like, with the 10 grapples and standoffs and try to make an epic field. Now, I think they were just thinking the crowd would die down and trying to kill time and then do what they had to do, and then it just never happened. It only intensified, I think, when they saw all these tie-ups. I think it just made the group think, the rabid mentality just kind of built up even more, almost like they were shoving in our face, like, yeah, we're both leaving. We're just going to tie up in the middle of the ring, screw you guys, and then it just started this cycle of anger and hatred and craziness.
What'd you think, Scott? Did you get the same feeling there?
Yeah, I never thought of the that was a good comparison, Claire, to the Hogan Warrior at six, where they were like restarting, you know, like different types of starts. I think they both were thinking, you know, the crowd will crap out here, and then we can kind of get in the groove. We'll let them have their couple minutes of shitting, and then move on. And then when they didn't, I think they kind of lost focus and mangled some crap together. Yeah, I do think that's good. I like that theory that they were trying to let the crowd, you know, let us fuck with them for a couple minutes, and then, you know, and then we'd give up and then move on to something else, and then they would continue on. But when we didn't, I think they lost their focus and became a shit show. Yeah, pretty much.
So as the bell rings, crowd already chanting "You sold out," singing the goodbye song. JR's forced to admit that Brock's headed to the NFL. They had no chance otherwise with the crowd being so loud. Austin's as a ref is the usual outfit. I thought that was kind of goofy. Can't even wear a fucking ref shirt. The whole thing is a mess. Mm. Crowd chanting for Austin. Crowd is dumping on everything. Only cheering for the fans dressed as Savage and Hogan having a fake match in the aisle. Because there's one point where, Claire, I think you mentioned it today, was Goldberg was hitting a move, right, or something, and everyone starts cheering.
Yeah. Like, Goldberg does something. I don't remember what because I couldn't even, like, comprehend what was going on in the actual match, but and then suddenly you start hearing like some cheering and you're like, oh, are they getting behind? I mean, I knew what was going on, but if you're watching at home, you might think for a second they were kind of getting behind Goldberg, and then you hear the Hogan chants kick in and you hear Hogan, and if you're just watching at home, you just think that the fans have just lost their shit and are just like chanting forever they feel like chanting. But I mean, because most people don't realize that not far from us, where there was that fake Hogan and fake Savage having a match in the aisle, and everyone was just cheering for Hogan or Savage, and it was like, it's the same. This is the kind of stuff I saw when I was in New Orleans at WrestleMania 30. People having like dressed up as costumes and having matches like in the street. It was ridiculous, and that was basically the same thing that was happening here. And it was a nice distraction from the match for us. So we started to get pretty behind it ourselves. And
it was literally, I think, like the next section. Almost.
Yeah, it wasn't far over. I know we could see it pretty clearly.
Yeah, it was clearly like a section away, or maybe two sections away. Yeah.
Really bad booking choices for this match. They're going for the epic power match, like Claire said, but just too slow. Nobody cares anymore. Crowd digs Goldberg's military press into a spear, proof that they could have maybe gotten into it if it was booked better, which I do think is the case. I really think if it was booked more with more action and gave the fans a chance to get into it, I think with that crowd they would have.
Like, what if Goldberg just tackles Lesnar to start the match and they start going at it?
Yeah.
The crowd never has a chance to get in that frenzy. They're like, oh, action.
Right.
And then they might have been like, okay, I guess we'll watch this now.
Because when there were some big moves.
Yeah. For 3 minutes, and then we get all riled up.
Because when there were some big moves, we definitely get into it. Goldberg misses a spear. After the crowd almost got into it, Brock goes to a long modified chin lock, and the crowd just dies again. You get more silence and boos. Goldberg gets a near fall on a spear, survives F5, hits another spear and jackhammer for the win. Crowd gives a Bronx cheer that is finally over. Real bad mess. It's interesting to me that Goldberg got the win with both leaving, because I guess they just wanted to send everyone home happy, but don't you think deep down they would have thought, you know, Brock is, if either guy has a future at some point, it's going to be Brock and not Goldberg? Like, to me, don't you think if you have any kind of forward thinking, maybe you just give this match to Brock on the hopes that he comes back? Because, I mean, they had to know Goldberg wasn't coming back ever.
Yeah, no, he was. I think they were both. Well, I mean, we know what happened, but at least we thought they were both done. It is kind of ridiculous if you think about where Brock is now. I mean,
right. That's,
if you compare it, think of that night. If you told me in 10 years he's going to be the best, biggest thing they have going again, in a way we can never even imagine, headlining WrestleMania 31, I mean, our heads would explode. But right. Yeah, no, crazy.
You think Brock should have won, Scott? What do you think it
is? I don't think it mattered who won at
no.
this point.
I don't think it mattered either.
I guess I'm not should he have won. Are you surprised? Are you surprised that Brock didn't?
A little. I think fans were... I think they had gotten past the Goldberg was a WCW guy thing. But I think that more fans... I think everyone was just upset the match was just trash. I don't think they really gave a shit who won. I think if they were happy, Austin just stunned
them
in the middle of the
ring. I mean, more from a business decision. Would there have been any benefit to giving Brock the win?
I think they thought...
It's more of a good showing, saying, we know what you're doing to us, but you know what? We're going to let you go out with the win just in case they decide to come back.
I mean, I wonder what the... what we're not talking about here is, I wonder what Goldberg's situation was. Was he just saying, you know, this was nice.
Yeah.
I don't know if I feel like wrestling anymore. And maybe they thought Goldberg, because I've been saying to you all along, JR, I thought Goldberg was becoming still very bankable, even at the Rumble. He got a crazy pop.
Right. But then he was barely on. I mean,
yeah,
from
that,
no way
that
out
just,
to here, he was like never on.
Yeah, that's odd. I don't understand that.
At some point, they soured on the Goldberg project. I mean, for whatever reason, even though, I mean, you guys have talked about it numerous times. I mean, he was really over big when he first came in. And during that SummerSlam match, that Elimination Chamber, where I think we all agree he should have defeated Triple H there. And I think if they really rode him better, he could have been bigger. But I still don't know. By the time you get around to WrestleMania, maybe they always wanted to do this Benoit Eddie thing, and they were never going to keep the title on him for long anyway. So, I mean, maybe at the end of the day, no matter what they do, they end up here. Because, I mean, he probably had a year contract. I mean, he came in, I think, right after Mania last year. So
right, definitely
he was always just planning on one. He wanted to have one run in the WWE in the big time and do it. And that was always the plan. I mean, I don't know if he planned to wrestle for 10 more years or anything like that.
I think that, and we had mentioned, JR, that I think they could have recovered if they had let his reign as world champion go a little longer, maybe have a singles match with Kane and Armageddon, beat him, then maybe have a triple threat at the Rumble instead. Just give him an extra month.
Right.
Get a squash to RVD and Booker T in a triple threat.
Yeah, have them a triple threat, pin both of them at the same, just stack them on top
match
of each other.
On heat. Yeah. That would be a heat match for sure.
Yeah, it'd be a or an afterburn. And I don't know, maybe they thought Goldberg was a smarter businessman than Brock. I think Brock, I mean, maybe they thought Brock was younger, maybe a little more immature, and thought, you know what, he's never going to come back. Goldberg is a guy that we can probably talk to. He's a little older. He kind of knows his way.
But that's like, to me,
I think they were just annoyed Brock was leaving after they spent all this time on. They're like, all right, screw it.
I mean, honestly, I think it's even more like basic than that. I think it's Goldberg's a good guy. Let him win. Send the crowd happy as they could maybe be with this.
Yeah.
Based on both guys going anyway. So,
just looked up. It says on April 17th, WWE put out a press release on their website claiming that WWE and Austin were unable to settle their long-running dispute and had, again, parted ways.
Okay.
So, about a month, I suppose, then.
All right. Maybe we'll
I don't know when he came off TV, but that's when he was gone.
Well, he had to be on again, so we'll talk about him probably at our next show.
Okay.
So, where are we at? Brock flips off the crowd and Stone Cold. Stone Cold hits a stunner on Brock and Goldberg. Pointless mess. One of the most surreal moments I've ever witnessed live. Crowd completely checked out and shit on both guys. It could have been so much more. Same for Goldberg. Seems like a wasted opportunity over the last 12 months for him. It could have been a star. When they needed one the most, they really needed a guy like him, and I thought he could have carried them like we were just saying, and instead they pissed on him and wasted him. Not a huge loss with Austin and Sheriff stuff. It felt a bit flat. Like, I don't think him leaving was a big deal. I thought he needed a break. I thought he had to let the promotion breathe. I thought they were still under the Austin weight as long as he was around. And I didn't think they'd ever really be able to fully kind of move on until he left for a while. So the match that seemed foolproof 2 months earlier completely fell apart as soon as it started.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So very interesting, but one of the most unique matches, I think, in Mania history.
Oh, we'll talk. I'll bring Goldberg up again.
In a weird way, it's one of my favorite matches to watch. I've watched it numerous times, and I haven't watched the show that much over. But it's just fascinating, especially being there and reliving it. And just, it's just one of the most surreal experiences. I don't know if, I mean, has there been an instance? Obviously, since then there has been very recent instances of the crowd just turning on what they saw. But
that was
I don't
first,
remember anything. It might be the first. I mean, I'm sure it's happened before in arenas somewhere. But I mean, one of the first times I remember, at least on such a large scale, at WrestleMania, Madison Square Garden, the crowd just completely just turning on everything that's happening.
Let me ask you this, both you guys. Again, this has nothing to do with the timing of the show. The show was going to go till the following year anyway, so that wasn't the issue. At 13:48, do you think like about 5 or 6 minutes into this match and they realized this thing was circling the bowl quick that they should have maybe gotten Austin's ear and said, you know, tell these guys to just wrap it up and get out of here because this is turning into a shit show? Or do you think they just wanted it, they didn't give a fuck and they just wanted the thing to play out to the end?
I think it was there for Austin, honestly.
Yeah.
If they were having some issues with him, maybe they wanted to give him the shine, let him be the star for a little bit. And, I mean, Austin's still Austin, so they probably didn't want to cut him down. I think if Austin wasn't the ref here, they probably would have went home quicker made it like a squash.
I was just curious. Looking at the tie, I hadn't remembered the length until I just saw it now and saw 13:48, and I'm thinking, wow, they let this thing go to 14 minutes? Jesus Christ.
Maybe they were just like equally as fascinated by the crowd reactions as we were. Everyone is just, they were just mesmerized. Like, let's just roll with this, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if that.
Probably not, but.
I mean, that's an interesting point, Claire. I think some people backstage might have thought that. I don't see Vince doing that. Vince is not that. I think Vince is very in the box when it comes to that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know what, guys, we can't let this crowd die. But at this point, yeah, I agree with you, JR. I think they just wanted to give Austin a little shine and just fuck these other two guys at this point, probably. So there you go. Goldberg wins. They both get stunned. And we will never see Goldberg on live TV again. And we don't see Brock live for almost 8 years. So for all you Place to Be podcast Vintage Vault fans that miss Brock, he'll be back at some point. All right. We talked earlier about Vince McMahon in the open of WrestleMania. Well, he actually makes his appearance in the garden. He comes out, gives a brief thank you and a well done thank you speech to the fans.
Hey, PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
Vince and Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan update. March 2004, Matt Rotella shaved his pussy hairs over my toilet and Jim Duggan had to come in and clean them up. That's what he was doing. They both suck. Griscola, what are you doing, tit face?
I am well, VKM, as tonight we are doing one of your seminal moments of your life. WrestleMania 20.
Oh, seminal. Office. I'm into that.
Yes, that's what I thought. That's why I said that. How you doing, VKM?
Speaking of seminal fluids, how was your Valentine's Day, Chris Golo?
It was quite well. How was yours?
You're my son-in-law. Have a good time?
We had a blast. Judy Martin came over.
I don't let him out of the house for just anyone, you know.
I know, but Judy Martin came over. Donna Cruciello.
Judy Martin, that crusty bitch.
Yep, we had some chicken a la king. Everything was great.
How she
was
always yours, tries to use menopause as an excuse for why she has a headache, but I tell her to roll the fuck over and get busy.
That's pretty much how it worked out, but she makes a pretty good pot pie. How was your Valentine's Day,
pot
VKM?
Pie, huh?
Yeah.
Stick my thumb in that. I was good. Had a good time. Hung out with Lou Rotella. Smacked Matt around. Me and Parv. Smoked a blunt. We had a good time.
Speaking of VKM, speaking of
Why
guys.
Why
didn't
you invite me, Vince, man? You're
look who's here.
Blunts with Parv.
You're dead to me, Claire. Don't talk to me.
Can't we just let bygones be bygones?
You tried to kill me. You put me in the hospital in a coma. I lost a year of my life.
Storyline. You
think I would have the network launch on fucking on demand like this nonsense would have if I was around? These idiots moved forward without me. It would have been on cable. I had Rod Perth the Body Hammer lined up.
Vince,
we were
no
going to replace USA.
Anymore. Everyone's cutting the cord. We all have Rokus and stuff. You did it the right way.
Roku? Wasn't he part of the Orient Express?
No, that's a...
See the guy that replaced Sato?
I think it was Akia was his name.
Oh, whatever. How you guys doing? How you been anyway, Claire? It's been a while.
I've been all right. I've been. I've missed you, to be honest. You don't return my calls. You don't return my texts, my Skypes. I call you every day. You don't pick up. No,
I need a reason why. I mean, give me a reason why I should let you back in my life of luxury that I have going on here.
Because you miss me like I miss you. Come on. I mean, karaoke nights? Is karaoke nights and Jaeger bombs not enough reason for you?
I mean, we had a good time, but I got Rotella. I got Armento. He goes down to the breakfast buffets at the hotels and loads me up. Brings it up to the room and then sits outside the door while I finish.
It's like having a four horseman without Arn Anderson. I'm your Arn Anderson. I'm the Arn to your Rick.
Who the fuck are the four horsemen? Who are the four horsemen?
The four horsemen, the famous NWA stable, one of the greatest groups of all time. You know,
Claire, you're not helping your cause here.
I never heard of them. I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, if you want to talk to me about...
Talk to your boy Parv about the four horsemen, all right? He'll tell you what they're all about.
You want to talk about like Slick Stable with like the Warlord of Power and Glory?
That's what I meant.
Ah, okay, yeah, the Torchbearers, the original.
I'm the Batista to your Triple H.
Well. All right, Claire. I'll give you a second chance. I want you to come over this weekend. We're gonna have a best of in your house party at my house. Everyone's gonna dress like their favorite in your house star.
Can I win a house? Will someone win a house?
If you come dressed as Stephanie Wyand and you bring your buffalo dip, I'm gonna let you back in the crew.
Done.
Back of the pussy posse for life.
Yes.
Rotella's gonna be Todd Pattengill. Armento's Doc Hendricks. Chris Cola, you're not invited. You suck.
Big shock.
Yeah, big shock. Oh, poor me. Poor Scott Chris Cola. Pity party city. All right, what are you fucking at? You give me a break. I'll burn down your Knights of Columbus and then take all the money. All right, tell me, what are you watching tonight?
WrestleMania 20, baby.
I don't listen when you talk, Chris Cola. I don't listen to you. I hate you. Claire, what are we watching?
It's WrestleMania 20. It's one of, we hung out afterwards. You remember that night. We did the karaoke. That's when I first.
Yeah, with the White
that's
Castle.
That's the first time we did a duet together.
That's right, yep. That was her name, right, duet? We did it together?
You remember, Vinny. You see, you need me around.
Jesus, get out of here.
All right, what did you think about the show? You guys enjoying it? That great Goldberg-Brock Lesnar Haas battle? Two champions, two warriors, two thoroughbreds?
Yeah, it was great.
They put on a show, Vinny. No doubt about it.
Sleeping through it.
That's it? Those are all your thoughts? Nothing else?
No, there were some great matches, some great moments. We saw two of the two fan favorites finally get their due, finally get their WrestleMania moment. We saw some great stuff with The Rock and the Nature Boy. You know, we saw really the end of the show, I think, warmed all of our hearts. It was a good effort on your part, Vince.
That's nice. My question to you, Vince, VKM, is why did you hang Mean Gene and Bobby out to dry while you, May, and Moolah were having that three-way in the closet?
I don't answer irrelevant questions. I was too busy prepping Molly Holly to get her head shaved. And that's not all.
Whatever. You were getting something else. You were shaving something else. That's fine.
Claire, you going to WrestleMania again this year?
Yeah, Vinny, I've pledged to go every year for the rest of my life until I die. So, of course, I'm going.
Okay. What do you want to see? What do you want to see out there in San Diego?
Well, as you know, I mean, this is, as you know, a point of contention between us, and we all know how that worked out. But, you know, I'm a huge Daniel Bryan fan. I grew a similar beard as to him to support him last year. And, you know, thankfully, thankfully the fans occupied Raw and got him in the main event. You know, he got his big moment last year, kind of similarly to how a couple gentlemen, Mr. Guerrero, Mr. Benoit, got their moments to shine at WrestleMania 20, the show we're talking about tonight. So it's very fitting, you might say, that we're kind of seeing this underdog story once again. And it really warmed my heart last year in New Orleans when Daniel Bryan won. He was in the main event. I'm just wondering if, you know, is there a chance we might see something like that again this year?
Is there a chance?
Yeah, I mean, because of what the fans want. They love that guy.
Let me tell you what kind of chance I think that has of happening. The troll's computer glows white on the desk tonight. A lot of Mountain Dew can be seen. A kingdom of isolation. I force Steph to be their queen. The trolls are howling, even this jobber Landstorm guy. I just can't bury him. Heaven knows I tried. Don't let him win. If he does, they'll see. He'll lose his mind, and there goes Brie. No more jobs. They say yes, I say no.
Well, this is my show. Let him win. Let him win. Can't hold him back anymore. Let him win. Let him win. Turn Reigns because he's a bore. I don't care what they're going to say. Let Lance Storm rage on. Murder, suicide never bothered me anyway. Funny how these stupid fans don't care that he is small. And all then booing David B can't get to me at all. Wonder how many jobs that he can do. Lose to Miz, Ryback, Jimmy J, Uso. It's Cena or Reigns, no Bryan for me. You'll see. Let it go. Let it go. You say you'll cancel, then you'll buy. Let it go. Let it go. Now you'll really see them cry. He's B plus at best. And that's where he'll stay. Let Lance Storm rage on. I got a million buys anyway. His body flies through the air, down into the ground. His neck is spiraling in broken fractals all around. And one last job to Kane hits like an icy blast. He'll never get it back. The past is in the past. Let it go. Let it go. Or his weak back will break like Shawn's. Let it go. Let it go. His championship days are gone. So here I stand with the New Day. Even though there he is gone, racism never bothered me anyway. Bring me Akeem.
Well, Vince, I don't think it's going to happen, Claire. Based on what he's saying,
yeah,
there.
It doesn't sound like it, but you know, we can dream, right? Maybe he'll fall into another coma conveniently, and then we can see some things some things happen.
Claire, I think you're going to get what you want.
You think so?
Yeah, I think Vince is losing. I think he's lost. All he's right. Gone.
Let's hope
he's gone.
You don't always get what you want, as the song goes.
Yeah, he's gone.
All right, Scott. What's our next match here?
All right, next up we have our second our other pair of tag team championships on the line, the WWE tag team titles, a.k.a. the Blue Belts, your champions, JR's favorite singles mashed together tag team of all time, the team of Rikishi and Scotty Too Hotty. Not as cool. In another four-way, this time the team's a hell of a lot better than the ones in the other match anyway. The Basham Brothers, former champions, Doug and Danny. JR's favorite team of 2003. Shelton Benjamin, Charlie Haas, world's greatest tag team, and the Dudley Boys of this match, the APA. We could give you a backstory. JR, is there any? It's pretty much the same thing as the other tag match.
The 226 SmackDown, the APA defeated Rikishi and Scotty in a non-title match. The champion's slump continued a week later when Danny Basham defeated Scotty in a singles match. On 311, they get back in a roll, defeating the Bashams in a non-title match. Scott, this is Ron Simmons' final pay-per-view match until 2006 when he wrestles at Survivor Series that year. A few weeks after the show, the APA had a falling out that we detail in Judgment Day. Farouk would be kicked to the curb by Bradshaw and end up leaving the promotion. Simmons decided to retire due to some nagging injuries. He would remain out of the spotlight until returning in a backstage and sporadic role in 2006. His final record, including that Survivor Series 06 match, would be 15-31-2, 0-7 at the Royal Rumble, 1-5 at WrestleMania, 1-0 at SummerSlam, 2-3-1 at Survivor Series, 13-16-1 at other events. So we'll talk more about that in May for sure. This is also finally, thank God, Rikishi's final pay-per-view appearance. He and Scotty would hold the tag titles until April 20th when they lost into an odd combination that we'll get to. Rikishi was released on July 16th after they had warned him to lose weight, but he couldn't drop. Since leaving, Rikishi would compete on the independent scene, having a brief stay in TNA and spending time overseas. His final record, including his runs as Fatu and the Sultan, 12-26-1, 0-10 at the Royal Rumble, 2-2 at WrestleMania, 0-3 at SummerSlam, 2-2 at Survivor Series, 8-9-1 at other events, and of course back in the news nowadays because of his entry into this year's Hall of Fame class.
And his sons are tag champions. So there we go.
There you go. So balancing out the Raw side, again, just getting guys on the card. Main four teams that have filled the division since the fall. World's Greatest Tag Team in APA are in the final stretch as units. The Bashams doing their thing.
My back is getting tight. Is that the Bashams theme song?
Yes, Doug and Danny. Rikishi and Scotty still awful champs. Shelton and Bradshaw start off both preps for bigger things in 2004 here. Continuing battle from last month. World's Greatest Tag Team looked the best early, but not due to the nature of the match, really. Lots of broken up near falls. Slower pace here, again, just like the other tag match. World's Greatest Tag Team grinding where they can. Bashams get some decent teamwork in. Rikishi gets a hot tag, runs through everyone. Crowd flattened out a lot by this point. Stinkface on Haas gives Bradshaw a chance to take over. Wrecks Danny with a super stiff clothesline from hell. Rikishi comes in, takes out Bradshaw, sits on Danny for the win. And this was fucking stupid, having them retain. Terrible stuff. A blah match, just wasting time. And I get you wanted to have guys on the show. This match did not need to happen. Of any of them, even more so than the Raw match. I'm sitting here in traffic. Queensboro Bridge tonight. did you guys see any redeeming quality in this match at all besides continuing the crowd?
It got World's Greatest Tag Team on the show. That's about the only one I can think of. You've mentioned this a couple times in the last few shows, but they feel like such a nostalgia act at this point. They feel like more of a nostalgia act than like the guy like Mick Foley. I mean, it's ridiculous. Right. Like the whole dancing afterwards. Like really? Now we got to sit through this dance again, and the celebratory worm not even on anybody. It's like, come on, this is out of control. Like why is this even happening?
Brutal.
I didn't remember them being tag team champions. I mean, I totally blocked that out of my memory as well.
It was better existence that way.
Yeah. So yeah, no point. The point was to get everyone on the show again, and I don't know, whatever.
Anything here for you, Scott?
Nah, moving on. Nothing at all.
Again, to me, the highlight or the like touch point of this match is just that Shelton and Bradshaw being prepped for stuff. Like they get a little bit of shine, and you could kind of see them. If you look at all the guys in there, they seem like the two that really, and Haas, but those seem like the guys that really have the most future of anyone that's in there.
Yeah.
Did you think Bradshaw would be main eventing within 6 months? I don't care, because all
I want to do. That was his answer.
No, definitely not. I definitely didn't see that coming, but you could tell they had him prep for something more than just this going nowhere team. Mm. Just cash my check and drive right home to you. That about sums it up for them.
Yes, so, pretty much.
That's that match. Let's move on.
Yes.
We go now. We get a couple things here. So we get an Edge vignette. Mm-hmm. Long-awaited return. Many thought he'd actually come back at the show, but they hold off on him. He's the only guy that didn't fucking fight at the show. A lot of excitement, though, for Edge's return. Been out since February of 2003. Mm-hmm. So a long time coming. We then get an awesome moment here, Scott and Mark, when Jesse Ventura comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool. Comes out and interviews Donald Trump.
Looking like a Taliban.
Yes, he did look
like he did here.
Jesus.
Did look like a Taliban.
Damien Mizdow.
Fun stuff. Again, time eating on a long show that probably wasn't completely needed, but I thought it was fitting. You had to have Jesse get some screen time and talk a little bit.
At the Garden? Absolutely.
Yeah, you had to do it. You had to. So, hang on, I'm going to try and get the... there it is.
There we go.
Oh, sad. It was cut off the network. So I thought that was fitting that they had him do that. Such a big part of WrestleMania in the early years.
What was that stinker theme they played?
It was awful.
It was fucking dreadful. So then it was probably on that Jesse Ventura story movie. probably was played on that. It was good to see and Trump kind of kicking his way. What are we talking? 10, 20, 15, let me think. 15 years since WrestleMania 5. So there you go.
And of course, he teases his presidential run about we think we need to put a wrestler in the White House in 2008. So Seems like it was actually going to happen. I know. It seemed like something he was really pumped about.
He mentioned it a couple times. Like, I think in the clip that they showed at the Hall of Fame, I think he mentioned it too. And then again here. So it's like, all right, I guess he's definitely doing it. Get ready.
Nope. Now he's a lunatic. Okay. Next up, our next title match, the Women's Championship
on
the
line. By
the
way, quick crowd coma check, because I'm pretty sure we're still in it, and Goldberg-Brock didn't help. That was the match I think that was supposed to break up this run, but if you look at it now, since the Rocket Sock Evolution match, we've had Hall of Fame, Playboy match, Cruiserweight match, Brock Goldberg disaster, Vince comes out for a quick pop, SmackDown four-way, Jesse talking to fucking Donald Trump, and now this match. So we are just still flat.
I mean, Goldberg, Brock, at least we had a little energy. It just wasn't directed at them. It was directed at other things, but yeah.
But still nothing that we've been into.
No, not at all. Not at all. And again, another title match here. The Women's Championship on the line with a bit of a stip. Your champion, as JR mentioned, Victoria. We'll talk about when she won it and the backstory. Taking on Molly Holly, former champion. With a bit of a stipulation here, JR, tell us about it.
On the final Sunday Night Heat of 2003, Victoria defeated Ivory to earn a title match. On 12/29, Victoria attacked Molly after they teamed for a loss in a six-diva tag, essentially turning her face in the process. The next week on Heat, a test boot drilled Victoria, taking her out of action. Molly gloated the next night and claimed that she had won the title match with Victoria by forfeit because she was not there. On the 125 Heat, Victoria returned to pin Molly in a non-title match and followed that up by pinning the champ in a tag match the next night on Raw. On 223, Victoria defeated Molly, Jazz, and Lita to win the championship. And a week later, Molly again fell to Victoria in a tag match. After the loss, Molly jumped her and attempted to rip her hair out before they were broken up. It was then announced the two divas would square off at Mania, with Molly getting one final shot at the belt. And if she lost, Victoria would get to shave Molly's head. And Claire, I don't know if you remember this, but when they wheeled out the barber's chair, remember we thought Brutus Beefcake was coming out for like a special barbershop?
We were like, we thought we like figured it out before everyone else. We're like, oh my God, it's definitely they're going to set up a whole barbershop. He's going to come out and cut the hair. Nostalgia. And then
nothing.
No, just some random.
I think we even forgot it was for this match. We just thought he was going to do like an interview. Like not even to cut
like
the barber,
like have a barbershop. I got to point out how like I thought it was just hilarious, like hearing Howard Finkel describe the rules. Like he just does it so serious. He's like, if Molly wins, she will be the women's champion. But if she loses, she will have to cut her hair. And it's just like he's so serious the way he says everything. It's so one of my favorite Finkel. Anytime he has to explain the rules for something, I just adore it.
I'm lesbians. So long feud here. I like the stip. Molly looking very good. Victoria's face turn led to the title win. Molly's aggressive early, and I thought this is a strong women's match on paper for WrestleMania. Victoria comes back, drives Molly to the floor to regroup. Molly takes back over, works a neck vice. Crowd still quiet. It's a long show. Some shaky segments, like we said, have just really taken its toll. Molly gets a sunset flip powerbomb from the turnbuckles. Pulled working hard, the crowd isn't buying it. Victoria blocks a Widow's Peak and gets a backslide for the win. A weak ending, and I thought it was very disappointing considering who was in the match. Could have been much more. Molly tries to run away. Victoria catches her, shaves her. More time eating. They could have done the shaving on Raw. I mean, I get why they did it here to pay off the stip, but this is like the 15th reason people are buying this pay-per-view. It's not like one of the ones where they're buying it for the stipulation, so you need to have the payoff on the pay-per-view. I don't think anyone would have cared. I think they should have maybe even held this match till Backlash, to be honest with you. There just wasn't time. And I know you wanted to reward them, but maybe you just do something quick and have the stip on Backlash. It just felt rushed. It felt like
I'm surprised they didn't do like the tag team thing and toss them in there with like six divas just to get them all in the show, or to toss them in the evening gown match or whatever
that was. Battle Royal
match before. But yeah, I mean, especially to have two women's matches on the show. Like,
it felt really rushed, and it felt like they wasted the stip in kind of a blah spot here, that just already the crowd is just waiting for the big three matches, done with everything before it, and now we have to sit. It just felt like they wasted shaving Molly's head here. That's all.
And they had to, again, waste the time of her running into the crowd and all that crap. There was no need for that. It would have been better if the barber was just sitting there with the music playing. Comes out with his big shears. It would have been awesome. So Victoria retains her women's championship, and Molly Holly is now bald.
She's bald. You're bald.
They had in the graphic. She actually looks. They're saying, oh, she looks pretty good without hair. All right, time now for the We're already at like 3 hours and 15 minutes or something. So, all right. Next match. One of the big three. One we had definitely been looking forward to. The WWE Championship on the line. Your champion, Latino Heat, Eddie Guerrero, of course, won the title from Brock Lesnar in February out in San Francisco. Taking on the number one contender, who won a number one contender's match in San Francisco. And that was, of course, Kurt Angle. How did we...
Yep, on the 219 SmackDown, Kurt Angle's refereeing a match using Chavo and Eddie Guerrero when he snapped on Eddie, beat him down to a bloody mess. The next week, an angry Eddie called out Angle before storming backstage to find him. In his search, Eddie shoved Paul Heyman, who fell into an injured Dawn Marie. Heyman had Eddie escorted from the arena. Later in the night, Angle came to the ring to explain himself. He claimed that he attacked Eddie not only for himself, but also for all fans and all of America. He told everyone that Eddie was a former drug addict that taught kids that it's cool to lie, cheat, and steal. And he wanted America to return to its fundamental morals and character and claimed that Eddie would fall off the wagon soon enough and we don't need a drug addict representing WWE as a champion. You hear that, Claire? As Angle was wrapping up his speech, Eddie appeared and attacked him. The scuffle was short-lived as Heyman had the police arrest Eddie for attacking a woman backstage. Angle said he'd be proud to take Eddie's belt and restore order. On 3-4, Heyman announced that Angle was not in the arena but would be joining us via satellite. Later that night, Eddie and Heyman had a confrontation about Eddie's recent actions. After Heyman laid into Eddie's actions and past addictions, Eddie mentioned that he could beat Heyman with his hands tied behind his back, and Heyman held him to that statement, making a match for later in the show. A few minutes into the match, Heyman left the ring and bailed to the back. As Eddie, hands tied behind his back, followed him up the ramp, Kurt Angle appeared from the back. With his eyes locked on Eddie, he slowly taped his fists, and the facial expressions and selling for both men were tremendous. You could feel the tension pulsing in the arena. Angle slowly got in the ring and proceeded to hammer on Eddie with a series of closed fists. As Angle taunted Eddie with his title, Eddie spit in his face. Angle responded by smashing Eddie in the face with the belt and standing tall to end the show. The next week, Eddie defeated Shelton Benjamin and had a stare down with Angle to add a final bit of heat. What did you guys think of the build to this? Because it kind of came a little bit out of nowhere. But remember, Angle had been teased in this feud a lot with Eddie when him and Chavo were doing their thing in January. Angle kept intervening. And that whole thing when he comes out with the taped fists and the red sweater and all that, like, I love that whole beatdown.
Yeah, I love the whole build in general. It played on Angle's character, or his overall character, so much, like, as the squeaky clean, milk-drinking, all-American guy, and it actually logically made sense that he would, you know, in the twisted ways heels operate, go after Guerrero for those reasons, for the drug use and then for the lying and the cheating and stealing, how he's it's really funny that this is the heel is the guy that's like against the guy that is the drug addict, the liar, the guy that cheats and steals. But that's just Guerrero's character, and that's how he was so over. And it was such a logical feud. I mean, it was these guys I think are perfect for each other character wise and in the ring wise too. So I was psyched for this match, you know, the whole way going. And this video package they put together was awesome too, especially that moment with the handcuffs and the beatdown. They really did a good job focusing on the emotions there and the seriousness of Angle and his intensity and how much he just needs to take this title from Guerrero because he's such a disrespectful, scummy guy that he can't stand to see the WWE title that he's held before on this lying, cheating schmuck. So it's awesome build, awesome feud, and what we'll see is a pretty awesome match.
Did you enjoy the build as much, Scott?
Oh, tremendous. I don't think we get to see enough of Kurt like this, and I agree with you, Claire. You know, he is a funny guy, and we like to see the comedy bits, but that moment where he's got like that tight shirt on, he's almost like a bar bouncer and he's taping the fist and Eddie's looking, you know, he's got the cuffs on, and that moment just made the feud for me because you don't get to see Kurt like that as much. I think it's the moment that Kurt graduates from just happy-go-lucky, either happy-go-lucky heel or happy-go-lucky face to like just a really evil, menacing guy when he really wants to be. I think it was tremendous. And it leads to here.
It does. And here is now. So awesome, intense building, like we said. Kurt questioning Eddie's past. Angle truly believes he's fighting to save the company in a great heel turn. Heyman playing Vince to Eddie Guerrero here with the old Vince and Austin role, kind of, with Heyman being the angry GM. Wants the belt off of him. Angle's confidence is oozing. Big moment for Eddie walking into Mania as the beloved champion. Chance here to win the crowd back, finally. Kurt goes right to the wrestling, trying to ground Eddie. Eddie tries to match him, trading holds. The crowd is pretty split. Lots of mat work, slow start, but you knew they were just going to lay in the groundwork for stuff later to come. Things pick up with Kurt going to the Germans. Fun tease of a German to the floor. Bad high-risk decision by Eddie. He gets slammed to the guardrail, gives Kurt a target to work after with his ribs, and Kurt goes right at it. Then he goes to a leg grapevine to take him down. Kurt uses suplexes to wear down and cut comebacks and submissions to grind right after that, which I thought was just perfect wrestling from him. Mm. Eddie gets an opening, goes for the F5. Goes for the frog splash, but Kurt dodges. Kurt starts tossing right-hand bombs. Eddie's like Rocky, just eating the attack and keeps popping back up, asking for more and more. Kurt's just in sick shape here, by the way, just really cut. Eddie fires up a comeback, tries the Three Amigos, but Kurt blocks him and turns to the ankle lock. Eddie kicks out of that. Kurt gets a big pop-up belly-to-belly off the buckles for a near fall. Eddie goes for the frog splash, but Kurt gets out of the way at the last split second. Easter frog splash, but he kicks out at the last split second for an amazing near fall that everyone bit on. After that, felt like Kurt was going to win, I thought. Kurt gets an ankle lock again. Eddie loosens his boot, though, and it slips off during the ankle lock. Kurt goes flying backwards, comes charging back in, and Eddie rolls him up for the win. I thought it was a super smart finish. I thought it played up well with Eddie's skill set. I thought Kurt wrestled a great match. Very nice defense and a big moment for Eddie. It started a little slow, but the finish was red hot. The crowd didn't totally come back, but they were much better when you could follow the intricate story on TV. I thought this was one of the rare matches that was better watching on TV. You guys, what did you think of the match? Do you agree with that point? Do you think it's something it's easier to sit back and kind of watch Angle pick up a part where he'd use the big strikes and then wear him down? And then, you know, the way Eddie kept trying to find that opening, I thought it played better here than when I remember in the arena being a little disappointed, actually.
Well, I think Angle's intensity comes across better on TV, you know, just because you got the close ups of him and that kind of stuff that maybe gets lost when you're just sitting in the crowd. Plus, we're probably 15 beers deep at this point. on my rewatch, I mean. It's a great match. I agree with you, though. I do think it came across better. I remember thinking it was just okay watching it live. And it definitely watching it on TV comes across as an awesome match. I mean, it's just such a good story of Angle's just intensity and how his intensity eventually gets the best of him because he's so focused on attack that Eddie's able to kind of use that momentum to pick up the win and use his I guess he technically didn't even cheat or lie or steal. Right. He just untied his shoe, there's nothing in the – I don't know. Maybe there is an obscure rule about that. You'll have to ask the PWO guys about the wrestling rule book on that one. But, it really good match, and I think it definitely rewatching it is a different experience than watching it live, which is I can't say the same for some other matches on here, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's a tremendous match.
How about you, Scott?
I think Cole and Taz add so much to this match. I think that's another reason why it's easier to watch on TV. And if you remember, he does cheat a little bit because when he does cradle Kurt up, he hooks his feet on the bottom rope to kind of tighten the cradle, but I think Cole and Taz add so much to this match. I think that's another reason why it's better on TV. But
it was believable that Angle might win because it's not the main event. It's not the last match on the show. So, I mean, I think we might have bought the false finishes with Angle a little more just because it's like, all right, well, it's not the main event. So could totally see him winning. Could totally see them feuding all summer. So it was definitely a match where you didn't know the outcome and didn't feel predetermined at all. I mean,
right. Eddie didn't seem like the kind of guy that was a lock to have a long
not
reign.
At all.
So
right.
It definitely wasn't believable.
Yeah, but I think Kurt, if you look at all the times where Kurt has been a challenger, heel or face, particularly heel, obviously, this was this moment he just really turned it up and became a different Kurt Angle. And I think that goes back to the feud with the taping of the fists. I mean, that moment, you know, we've said it a few times so far, but that moment just changed Kurt to a different kind of challenger. Mm-hmm. And I think he shows it here. I mean, he wants that belt, and just beating a guy is one thing, pinning him, the ankle lock, whatever. But Kurt wanted to hurt Eddie, and Kurt rarely went into a match with that thinking. He wanted to pummel Eddie and punish him, and take the title as well. And I don't think you've seen that from Kurt before, and I think that made the match so much better. The strikes, the near falls. I mean, that told the story. But I think the main reason that this is a better match on TV is because I think Cole and Taz are just fantastic, and they've done a great job on SmackDown of painting the picture for this feud getting to this point. I think that's another reason why it's a better TV match. But 21 minutes, no wasted energy, no wasted motion. We as a crowd, again, I think we got into it because we wanted to see Eddie win, but I think we're still trying to get out of the pit that was the last, like, hour and a half of what we were sitting through, so... But it's a fantastic match, and I think it doesn't burn Kurt at all, and it keeps the feud going.
Right.
So
it definitely won. Like I said, I've come to like more in rewatches than I did in the arena, and I don't know if it was this burnout, just taking so long, or the hope was that we were going to get this crazy classic, and it ended up just being. I feel like it was too smart of a match to enjoy in person at the end of a 4-hour show. You know what I mean? Like, it's a match you really needed to look at and study and to see what was going into it to me. And for me, anyway. I just remember
it's a match with a lot of little things. And, you know, it's hard to get the little things from in the stands when you're...
Especially where we were sitting with the length of the... Just so much went into us and not fully getting it.
Yeah. So, there you go. Eddie Guerrero retains his WWE Championship in a tremendous match against Kurt Angle.
Speaking of tremendous matches, what's next?
Well, tremendous pre-thing before the match. All right, next up, we have our second interconference.
Okay,
as the Methodists,
how about interpromotional? Straight up, just interpromotional.
Interpromotional match.
Yes, as the Methodists take on
the Methodist. Yes, as the Knights take on the Masons. No, all right,
interpolitical.
Yeah, let's give us some background on this, JR.
In January, ominous videos began airing in the arena whenever Kane was around. After Kane had buried his brother back in November, it seemed like Undertaker was returning to his old persona to obtain revenge. On February 2nd, as Kane was wrestling, the ring filled with smoke and a video played, sending him fleeing to the back. The next week, Kane had to trigger his pyro 3 separate times as he couldn't get it to ignite. When it finally did, the ominous video played again, claiming that the dead would rise in 34 days, and the arena was drenched in purple light. A week later, Kane refused to admit the Undertaker was behind the videos, repeating that he was dead. As he rambled on, the lights dimmed, thunder and lightning rang out, and rain started to pour onto Kane. At 2:23, Mr. McMahon showed up and said that Kane would face Undertaker at WrestleMania. The next week, Kane promised there'd be no return of his dead brother, and he promised to slaughter at WrestleMania. The gong sounded, chanting played, and flaming cymbals rose from the set. And then on 3/8, the Raw that we were at, it opened with a casket in the ring as lightning and mist filled the arena. Kane walked to the ring and knocked the casket over, and when it fell, an urn rolled out. Kane tossed the casket to the floor and stated he would defeat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Thunder then rang out in the ring began to levitate with Kane in it as Undertaker delivered a message to his brother. During all this build, Kane had told Undertaker that he was forced to bury him alive because Undertaker turned his back on his supernatural powers and became too human. So the stage was now set and the anticipation was high. It's 4.5 years after last appearing as the Dead Man in September of 1999. Undertaker was ready to return to his roots alongside his friend and buddy, Paul Bearer. Paul Bearer had been gone from WDTV since shortly after WrestleMania 16. He was serving a backstage role for a bit and then quietly left as his contract ran out in October of 02. After leaving WDE, he returned to his old Percy Pringle moniker, spent some time in TNA. In late 2003, Jim Ross contacted Bearer about returning, but Paul had to turn him down due to depression and health complications he was experiencing regarding his obesity. Ross told Paul that if he signed to return with WWE, the company would pay for gastric bypass surgery. Paul agreed and signed a 3-year deal with the company, followed through on the promise, paying for Bearer's surgery. He spent the next few months recovering, ensuring he'd be ready for a return here. And one last note, when The Undertaker does show up, he is accompanied by a bunch of druids, one portrayed by our buddy RJ Brewer. At the time, was Ring of Honor star John Walters. So
that's right.
One of the druids. Right. Intense build here, all completely carried by Kane and a bunch of pyrotechnics. Fitting choice of opponent here for WrestleMania 20. Cool fire effects on the set as Kane came out. Taker's comeback as Dead Man was a long time coming. Very anticipated. Lots of excitement. It was cool to see Paul Bearer back too. What do you guys... It was a nice touch, but what do you guys think the kayfabe phone call was like for Taker to call Paul Bearer back to come back to WrestleMania? Let's go. We're getting the gang back together, Paul. Okay! Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
What's your answer?
I'll be there.
I told you. Yes.
Taker looked a little bit odd at first. Seemed like a kind of a hybrid Dead Man. He had like the shorter hair, almost like a weird kind of cowboy look.
It's like a Deadwood character or something. Like,
it did. I remember a lot of people were disappointed. They thought he'd have like the long hair, but it was just impossible for him to grow back that fast. I mean,
he'd be all pale again, and like, right. No, he's pretty much the same guy.
Just gloves. Just with the music and not being a booger red. Crowd is pumped, completely woken back up for Taker's entrance finally. Of course, we hit the fire backstage that we could see because we could kind of see behind the curtain over there where our seats were. The druid, one of the torches fell or something and lit up on fire. So they're trying to put that out. Long epic entrance, which I thought was fine because you knew that was going to be the highlight of the whole match. No one was actually expecting the match itself to be anything. I thought Kane sold the shock very well. A loud Undertaker chant in that New York style. Undertaker. Taker tosses haymakers as Kane tries to shake off the shock. Taker gets all his usual offense in and Kane's rattled. We get a sloppy spot where Taker wasn't close enough to the ropes and he kind of gets flapjacked instead of thrown over the top. Taker uses some ground and pound, kind of hinting at a potential style change. Kane blocks old school with a choke, hits a choke slam. Taker comes back and hits a tombstone for the win. Match was absolutely just nothing, but the crowd was into everything Taker did. It is what it is. It's a cool moment. You get Taker back, and you deliver on that promise. So to me, this is one of those matches where anything that happened in the ring just was completely didn't matter. You guys agree?
Yeah, and I think they had the courtesy to keep it short. You know, I mean, they didn't try to make a 20-minute epic match out of it. So, I mean, it's definitely nothing remotely considered a good match. But, you know, it was really – it's more of a moment. It's meant to be the return of Dead Man Taker, and it's supposed to be that moment more than it is even meant to be a match. And, you know, if you're going to do that, you may as well have – you know, nobody cares if Kane's jobbing at this point. They did actually build him up as a monster for a long time before this. I mean, zapping McChain's testicles and stuff like that. And, hey, he's the guy. His choke slam is so devastating that it allowed Triple H to pin Goldberg in that one match. So, I mean, they're building him up as much of a monster as they could. And, I mean, whatever. The match is shit, but it's fine.
It's funny that it takes Taker just one tombstone here after three at WrestleMania 14.
I was thinking that, too. And, like, his shock that Taker could kick out of a choke slam when, like, didn't he kick out of, like, a tombstone at 5 years ago? Like,
right,
why would
right.
it be that shocking? But Kane did sell the shock of the whole thing pretty well. I mean, as far as he goes, probably his finest acting moment as maskless Kane.
Right.
Yes.
Any final thoughts on this match, Scott?
The open is just incredible. It's one of my favorite live moments, and I've seen a lot of Taker. But
the pop for Paul Bearer is awesome. I mean, that moment is pretty.
Yes.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No, when we expected Taker, Dead Man, but we didn't expect Bearer at all.
No, that sold. I mean, that sold the moment. And then
the role we went to, didn't he like? Talk or just
no.
Like, oh, yes. I thought that played over the speakers.
I don't think so. Huh. No, I think the first time you hear his voice is that night.
Because I think we heard the oh, yes, and we were all like, what? I think that's what we're thinking of. I don't think I remember being super shocked. And if that had happened, I don't think we would have been.
Hmm. Okay.
If poor, just poor, been drunk, poor, too.
Poor Paul Bearer would always like, look at that hideous face. Dick Jerry Lawler. The open is incredible. Regardless, he looks like, you know, some type of. Weird like spaghetti western cowboy or whatever, but didn't matter. He was back in the role that we wanted him to be in. And I tell you, the while we're on the subject, the badass run was pretty much two parts. I mean, from when he came back in May of 2000 till probably like Vengeance 01 or the 02 Rumble, he was absolutely dreadful. But then when he came, turned heel, won the title in 02, and pretty much till he left. His run really wasn't that bad, that second half, fighting Brock, and then even in 03, even though he's kind of floating on SmackDown, he had some good matches. So a lot of people think the Dead Man run was, or the Badass run was trash, but it's two parts. I think the first 2 years were pretty terrible, mm-hmm. and then pretty much from like, I would say January of 02 till he left in November of 03, I thought it was fine.
Yep, I would agree with
fine.
That.
You know,
it was time, though.
Oh no, there's no doubt.
It was definitely time.
Absolutely
to get back to
this.
They stuck with the biker Taker gimmick a lot longer than I ever thought. I figured, I mean, we're going to see the Dead Man come back sooner than later. And
seemed like
every time we thought it was going to happen, it didn't.
Right. Rumble 03 was the big one that it seemed like he was definitely coming back as the Dead Man. And he didn't. So by this point, it was like, all right, they better do it this time, you know. And it was a good fitting. WrestleMania.
Imagine
20
if he just came out in the bike here, like after all like the gongs and everything.
Oh yes, rolling. Paul Bearer on a sidecar.
Paul Bearer and it's oh, you beat me to it. One step ahead of me.
Well, all right, would it be funnier if he's on the handlebars?
Oh yeah, falls off.
That's terrible. So there you go. So Taker now, Jesus, what is he now? 12-0, I think, at this point. Let's see. Yeah, I think he's 12-0 at this point. Let's make sure we get this right so all the assholes don't come out.
They still weren't talking about it.
Yeah, because he was definitely 10-0 at 18.
They might have casually mentioned that he's...
7, 8,
it was definitely 10-0 at 18, Sky. He did the 10 fingers at 18.
That's right. It's the 10 fingers. So he is 12 and... Yeah, so 12-0 now.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Claire. It's they haven't really... I think the next year is when they really start to
talk about
it. I think
they mentioned it, but it only... I think with Orton is when it becomes a storyline.
Yeah, I agree.
Kane wasn't talking about breaking the streak.
No.
No. So Taker's 12-0. Great entrance. Mediocre match. And we move on. All right. Time, finally. What was it about?
Time to play the game. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
The ballad.
Coming up on the next show, Mark Claire will karaoke all of those songs.
Next show, I'm ready now.
Captain and Claire. Claire and Tennille. Claire and Tennille.
Oh, that's something a hell of a drink, the Captain and Claire. I'm going to start
the Captain
ordering
and
that.
The Captain and Claire. I'd order that in a heartbeat, the Captain and Claire. Mark Claire doing Muskrat Love.
We'll reunite and we will do drink Captain and Claire's and do that medley at karaoke. Yep.
Muskrat Count Love. It. All right. Got a lot going on here. An unprecedented kayfabe rule was broken,
mm-hmm.
leading to this match. Because obviously, in our previous year, since the brand split, if you win the Rumble, you face whoever your champ is on your show. Give us the background, JR, on how things change.
The 126 Raw, Shawn Michaels and Triple H were discussing their Rumble match from the night before. As Michaels was asking for a rematch, Sheriff Austin came out and said if Michaels didn't win the Rumble, and the Rumble winner got to choose to fight the champion at WrestleMania. It was then that Chris Benoit came out and made it clear he would be choosing whoever was World Heavyweight Champion for his WrestleMania main event. The next week, Michaels vowed that he'd get his rematch. Both Benoit and Triple H looked strong with easy victories, and the show ended with Michaels and Benoit staring each other down. After Benoit saved Shawn from Evolution attack. On 2-9, Benoit and Triple H were having a contract signing. When Michaels came down to interrupt, he went through his history and unfinished business with Hunter, but Benoit told him he couldn't finish it at WrestleMania. Before Benoit could sign his contract, Michaels super kicked him and signed it instead, and then quickly left the ring. Later that night, Eric apologized to Benoit and said he had the lawyers review the contract. He then gave Benoit a match with Michaels the following week. The 216 Raw opener, Triple H telling everyone that the lawyers were not sure who the rightful challenger was. Bischoff mulled over some possibilities before anything decided. Benoit jumped Hunter. Michaels defeated Benoit with a superkick after Triple H got involved. Hunter then dropped Michaels of the pedigree, but Austin came down and announced a WrestleMania main event would be a triple threat. This caused quite a bit of complaining among the smart fan community. They felt Benoit earned the right for a singles main event, and a one-on-one win over Hunter would be more than a triple threat. Many fans also surmised that Hunter would not job to Benoit, and Michaels was added to take the fall. Over the next 3 weeks, all three men would get into skirmishes, but there was no tipping as to who would be standing with the gold at the end of the night. What did you guys think of this whole nonsense with the super kick and Michaels is writing his name on the contract and somehow that means he has the match, which was really stupid way of doing this. And did you think it diminished Benoit at all heading in?
I think it did. Think it did. Not going in, I think Benoit recovered. But for that couple weeks, it kind of made Benoit look like a dope.
And I'm not that mad they did the match, but I mean, like, I hate the whole, like, if I write my name on it, that's the lawyers got to review this now. Like, the whole lawyers thing is just a dumb, like, they have to, what, review the law of if you sign a contract that someone is meant for someone else, you get it, like, the thing that you signed for. So,
I know,
that whole storyline is stupid, but they could have just said, well, you know, it was a tie last time and Shawn deserves not a rematch, and there you go. Like, why does it need to be a whole complicated, convoluted thing? I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't like Benoit losing to Shawn in that match that they had on Raw. That bugged me too.
Yeah.
I think it made Benoit look kind of like a putz for a couple weeks. But I think he recovered well enough heading into this show because I think he put Shawn in the crossface, and I think he put, you know, Hunter.
Do you think, with all things considered, they've been better just having Benoit fight Brock here, stick to SmackDown, win the WWE title, and let Brock leave and Benoit goes
especially
over.
If we knew Brock was leaving. Right. I mean, that would have been huge. They could have just put him over clean. But the match we got turned out great. But, you know, if we didn't know that, then I think that always would have made sense. And then they could have done
Shawn Triple H again if they wanted to.
Yeah, or Eddie really? Triple H. Right. I mean,
put Eddie in the three-way if you want. Yeah, you know, if you want to mix it up.
Amazing, actually.
It felt like they can't find Shawn something else to do with this one time. Like, it's not like their match at the Rumble was so hot he needed to be included here. They could have found
especially,
something
else for him. Especially, you can't put Foley in the main event because right, it's got to be a three-way. But, oh, well, actually, it should be now because now
I mean, I don't know.
Now I got to be in.
And I don't know who else he could have fought, but they could have made something work. Anything better than this. All right, years in the making, many were angry at Michaels inserted. Like we said, a lot were fearful that Benoit would lose. And, of course, the biggest trigger to that fear was that Backlash was in Edmonton. So, remember, the rumor was that he was going to lose here and then get the rematch and win at Backlash instead. A very nervous buzz in the crowd. Triple H with a big match, white boots on, of course. First WrestleMania triple threat main event in history. Hunter gets dumped to the floor right away as Michaels and Benoit trade holds on the mat with some big teases mixed in. Rotation takes Benoit out as Michaels and Triple H renew their matchup. Michaels hits the first big strike when he hits a moonsault off the top onto both guys on the floor. Benoit was quick and aggressive in his attack on Michaels, chucking him into the ring post. Hunter has looked much healthier in this match, slimmed down and tan, moving well, way better than he's looked in, I don't know, probably what, a year? I would say at this point. He takes over. He's able to work over both meticulously. Very well timed out match. Anytime someone has an advantage, the third guy shoots in and busts it up and takes over. Good battle with Benoit hitting Germans on Triple H, using forearms to wear him down to set it up. Crowd's finally fully behind Benoit, going nuts during the battle between the pedigree and the crossface, which Michaels breaks up. Benoit gets the Germans and a headbutt on Michaels, but Michaels survives. Michaels gets hot, uses his usual on Triple H, and the crowd is booing the shit out of him. Hits sweet chin music, but Benoit makes a save. Michaels hits the post and busts open a gusher. Benoit gets a crossface, which is a cool visual with Michaels bleeding while trapped in the hold, and Triple H reaches in and grabs his hand, blocks him from tapping out. Michaels' blood is just nasty here. Brawl spills out to the floor. All three battle on the announce table. Triple H and Michaels team up and hit a double suplex on Benoit through the table, and now the crowd's starting to fear the worst because Benoit's taken out. It doesn't look like he'll be able to make it back to win. Hunter and Michaels battle back and forth. Hunter's also split open, hits a pedigree, and slowly crawls over, and Benoit makes a great desperation save, diving in out of nowhere. Benoit turns the pedigree into the sharpshooter. Crowd losing it now at this point. Channing tap. Long battle with Benoit dragging Hunter from the ropes, but Michaels comes in and hits an awesome sweet chin music to Benoit, and you get a really nervous couple moments during that near fall. Best moment of the match is when Benoit dumps Michaels over the top, Triple H stalks him and lines up the pedigree, and the crowd gives this audible gasp because you think the worst is coming. Benoit blocks it and hits a crossface, and the crowd's just losing their shit. Hunter starts to fade, but gets one last tease. He pushes over and rolls, and for that split second, you think maybe they're going to fuck us and have him lose, but no. Benoit rolls back through, wrenches in, and Hunter taps out for the huge win. A tremendous WrestleMania moment. Pure elation in the crowd. Hunter's reign of terror is finally over. Michaels in the match. Did you think it hurt? Or do you think it actually helped now? Because he ended up beating both top stars. And that he pinned Triple H still.
I think looking back, knowing that I mean, I think we all thought that Triple H wasn't going to job, even if, and even though it was logical that Benoit would win this match, and it made sense in every way possible, there's part of you that's just like, are they really going to do it? Like, maybe they won't. Yep. So there was, you know, I mean, I had a hard time believing they would make it the main event and have anyone but him win, but I don't think we were totally sure, and we weren't going to believe it till we saw it. So, and looking at the match we got, which I think was awesome, the crowd was on, we were on the edge of our seat the whole time.
We were definitely
buying on the false finishes. I mean, I really think that the end product, as much as I don't think they went about it the right way and probably shouldn't have maybe done that match in theory, I can't really argue with how it all turned out, at least for that moment, for that night, because that was just an amazing experience. I don't think it could have come together more perfectly, and it actually kind of worked out in a way. Having an MSG, the history with Chon, I mean, he was such a heel there in this match. There was no split crowd. You know, there was no, like, some people pulling for Chon, some pulling for, you know, for Benoit, just definitely Scott not. Scott was pulling for Hunter, and that was it. And everybody, even Scott, he was pulling for Benoit, because you couldn't not. I mean, everyone wanted to see this guy finally get a real win, and the fact that it was Hunter that tapped really, I think, was extremely commendable that he did that. I don't think we should have to praise him for just doing a normal job. I mean, I think a lot of us were concerned that wasn't how it was all going to go down. So that really was important, I think, in that match for Benoit to get it over Hunter specifically, and to have him tap even more so, as opposed to get him with his main move, not a roll up, not some stupid finish, as clear as can be in the middle of the ring. Even after the only thing I question is, I don't know, should he have tapped sooner to the crossface instead of fought it longer?
WrestleMania main event.
But the way Hunter went about dragging it out really worked, especially with that one roll up. You think, oh my god, is he gonna roll him up now and get the pin? Or and then he just rolls it right into the center of the ring, and that's when we all knew then, and we're all yelling tap tap tap, and then that moment was just huge. I mean, we all popped, like jumped out of our seats. I mean, that was as marking out a moment as you can possibly get. So it's the perfect cap to the show, perfect cap to the storyline, even if the storyline wasn't great, but the long running storyline in partially in real life of Chris Benoit fighting for his way up and you know, becoming just getting his just deserves. I mean, I think he's just one of those guys that everyone who's a serious wrestling fan just enjoyed his work, and just in a way, like Daniel Bryan, it respected him for his work in the ring mostly. I mean, he didn't get over because of personality at all. I don't think anybody thinks that. So it was really just a sign of respect to be able to cheer for him and to see him win that title. And it was a magical, magical moment.
And in retrospect, it's funny that we were so nervous. I mean, look at the way he went over in the Rumble and the build. I mean, if that was anyone but Benoit, there's no way we're that nervous. I mean, you look back, the path was so clear that he was winning. It's just that the three guys involved made you have to stop and think about it, because Benoit was always held back and Triple H always went over. And if not, then Michaels always went over. So it was like when the guys involved made it seem scarier than it was. But when you look at the whole package and the way Benoit went over so strong at the Rumble to win it all, there was no chance he was losing here.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think the story told was great. I almost think that to a certain extent, I think, you know, life imitated art at times, because I think Triple H and Shawn knew that the fans wanted Benoit to win, and they knew the fans were not fans of them. So I think they used it like a, you know, let's fuck around with these guys for the first few minutes and really make Benoit look like the guy under our thumb. And I think that added to the drama of the match. And it worked so well. Regardless of what anybody thought of why Shawn was inserted or what have you, he just makes every match better anyway. And we would get a Triple H Benoit one-on-one down the road.
Plenty of them.
Yeah, yeah. So I had no problem with it. I thought the end was fantastic. You had to have the moment where Benoit gets taken out and they wrestle alone, and you're thinking, oh, fuck. And then Benoit literally comes. I mean, he literally jumps like 8 feet between after Shawn super kicks Triple H, and you're getting like a – he like flies across the ring, probably doesn't even touch the canvas to break that pin. It was amazing. But I think the moment that we all like shit ourselves was, when he super kicked. JR, you and I literally looked at each other and went, oh, fucking God, no. Even I said that. He's like stumbling up, and you're like, oh, God, we're going to get a fucked up pedigree. Yep. It's going to be like WrestleMania 19. It'll take him 5 minutes to pin him, and Jesus Christ. And then and then Benoit ratcheted, and we went nuts. And then we sat in the train on the ride home. We couldn't get that fucking theme song out of our heads. Just an incredible main event. Yeah, just an incredible main event and a way to end the show. A long night.
Memorable night.
And then, of course, the moment of Eddie coming in the ring at the end. And then that went off the air. And then, of course, the family. And
I mean, how sweet would it have been if Eddie just nailed him with the belt at the end and started a heel turn and started an interpromotional, intercontinental, whatever, interdenominational.
That was, I mean, I'm okay. I don't want to get too much of this, but I'm okay watching Benoit matches. It doesn't really bother me. Some of the later era does, like his last year or so. But that I had to stop after the match. That was one thing I couldn't sit and watch, was that celebration. And yeah, it was such a great moment live at the time for what it was. Just unbelievable seeing those two guys in the ring hugging with the confetti. But it's one that's way too sad to watch now. So WrestleMania 20 in the books. You know, we've gone over all the rankings and ranked WrestleManias left and right. I think it falls somewhere in the maybe the end of the top third, I think, just due to all the shit in the middle. I think the three of us probably like it more than most because we were there and the memories we have of it. But when you look at all the fluff from that, really from Rock and Sock until Eddie Kurt, is just a long stretch with not a ton going on. Thanks
There's
to Brock.
Definitely a lot of garbage in there. But I think the one thing that they do is they at the very minimum they keep all the fluff really short, really fast paced for the most part, really quick, and that keeps the show flowing at least. So even with the stuff that's not great, you know, you're never like really sitting there too long bored, you know, sitting on your hands. You're moving on to something else pretty quickly. So I think that's why even a show this long that has so much in it, you're able to sit through it. You know, you're never like, oh god, just end this. You know, so it's still a pretty, I would agree. It's probably in the, I don't know, where'd you guys rank this on your official rankings? It was somewhere in that top third, wasn't that?
Yeah, I think so. I want to say it was maybe just outside the top. No, maybe it was within the top 10. Yeah. I'd have to listen.
You know what? I know it's saved on my work computer, the rankings we did. I think we had it like it. Seven.
Well, that's me and you. I think we would have had it higher, but the one I did with like Brad and Chad.
The one you took on the branch. That's right. Yeah.
I want to say that we had it a little bit lower, probably for that one. But anyway. You know, it is what it is. I think they just, I don't think it's as much what was on the show as much as how they organized it. I think that was the bigger problem. But, so anyway, here's the work Steven put in. I don't want to disregard it because he put a lot of work in. Here's all the records for the guys on the show for WrestleMania after the show. Cena 1-0, Big Show 0-3, Booker T 1-2, RVD now 2-0, Dudley's 0-3 at Mania, La Rez 0-1, Cade 0-1, Jindrak 0-1, Christian 3-1, Jericho 2-4, Orton 1-0, Batista 1-0, Flair 1-2, Rock 5-2, Foley 2-3, Sable 3-0, Tori 1-0, Stacy 0-1, Jackie 0-1, Chavo 1-1, Tajiri 0-1, Akio 0-1, Shannon 0-1, Kidman 0-1, Noble 0-1, Dragon 0-1, Funaki 0-1, Mysterio 0-2, Goldberg 1-0, Brock Lesnar 1-1, Rikishi 2-2, Scotty 2-1, World's Greatest 1-1, Basham's 0-1, Bradshaw Farooq each 1-3, Victoria 1-1, Molly 1-2, Eddie 2-1, Kurt 2-4, Taker 12-0, Kane 2-3, Benoit 2-3, Triple H 5-3, Shawn 4-7. I think what tells you a lot about this card is how many new WrestleMania participants there were.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of 1-1, 0-1, 0-2, like that kind of stuff, you know. Not a
it begins again.
It does begin again. Born again.
That's right.
All right. That'll wrap up WrestleMania 20. It was a sprint and a marathon all at once. So, Claire, thank you for joining us. It was a great time.
A pleasure, Claire.
Be sure to check out.
It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to coming back on for the Royal Rumble 2013 Vintage Vault. So I can't wait for that.
We'll talk to you in 2022 when we get to that.
Sounds yes. good.
So, all right.
After this show, that's about the next
one. All right, we've got enough. Scott, we'll be back. We'll be back Friday night. We're ranking September-October pay-per-views, mm-hmm. finally. We'll do that. You can check out all our stuff, PlaceNation.com, players as well. Go vote, Final Four, Greatest 90s Tournament. Until then, we'll talk to you later. Everyone, take care.
Good to see you, Claire. Want some onion rings?
Yeah, take a break, man.
I would love some onion rings.
Go to Duchess.
Take a break, guys.
Okay, I'm
cross up.
Yep. I'm going to go dub some NBA games.
I made you hot, nigga. Catch me at the X with OG at a Yankee game. Shit, I made the Yankee hat more famous than the Yankee can. You should know I bleed blue, but I ain't a crypto. But I got a gang of niggas walking with my click though. Welcome to the melting pot, corners where we selling rock. Africa been by the shit, home of the hip hop. Yellow cap, gypsy cap, dollar cap, holla back. For foreigners it ain't fair, they act like they forgot how to act. 8 million stories out there in the naked city. It's a pity half of y'all won't make it. Me, I got a plug special ed, I got it made. If Jesus paying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade. 3 dice CeeLo, 3 card Marley. Labor Day parade, rest in peace Bob Marley. Statue of Liberty, long live the World Trade, long live the King. Yo, I'm from the Empire State. That's
Jungle with dreams are made of. There's nothing you can't do. Count
blinders, or they could step out of bounds quick. The sidelines is lined with casualties who sip the life casually, then gradually become worse. Don't fight the apple, Eve. Caught up in the in crowd, now you're in style. And in the winter gets cold, in vogue with your skin out. City of sin, it's a pity on a whim. Good girls going bad, the city's filled with them. Mommy took a bus trip, now she got a bust out. Everybody ride her, just like a bus route. Hail Mary to the city, you're a virgin, and Jesus can't save you. Life starts when the church in. Came here for school, graduated to the highlight. Ball players, rap stars, addicted to the limelight. Empty and May got you feeling like a champion. The city never sleeps, better slip you an ambient.